Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm Pat Sloan, and sometimes I find a guest just by walking around a trade show and bumping into them many times. That happened with Carrie Golder. I was watching her do some talks, and then I saw her over here doing some demos, and finally she like stopped me and she's like, let me show you what I'm doing. And that led to a long, nice conversation, and now she's here. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to talk with you today.
You know, Carrie, you and I chat back and forth before the show, and one of the things you told me is that, you know, like many of us, you started to sew as a little girl, but yep. Your passion, you have a great passion, you do everything, all kinds of sewing, but you love dolls. Why do you like doll making?
I think it's really fun to make something that you know a child or someone is going to enjoy for a long time, and I really love the challenge of working three-dimensionally and figuring out how all the pieces to the puzzle are going to fit together. And, you know, you're really thinking two-dimensionally when you're designing the pieces, but then you have to see how that's going to translate as a three-dimensional project. So I do love the challenge, but I also like the end use and the joy that comes from, you know, watching little kids play with your thing, you know, the toys that you create and stuff like that. So.
I think many of us have like a memory of a favorite doll. I have two. One was when I was very little, and it was a very basic teddy bear thing that my mom, who doesn't sew, had to mend over and over. And then I had a rabbit after that, and I still have the rabbit. But you know, do you find that when you talk to people that they really connect? They have a lot of childhood memories to toys.
I do, actually. I mean, one of the things that I remember most as a child was Cabbage Patch were really huge one year, the very first year they started coming out in the 80s. And, you know, my sister and I were hoping we would get one, and we ended up having one brought to us that we had to share. I have a twin sister. And my mother knew how difficult that was going to be for us to share one, so she ended up making a Cabbage Patch doll for each of us. So there was a pattern that was created. You could buy the head, and then she made the bodies. And yeah, it was just really neat that my mom could make that for us. And so I still have mine. My daughters have played with it now, too. And it's just really exciting for that to see that passed on from generation to generation. But, yes, a lot of people, they have those memories.
I think that that's a massive connection. And then, like, as sewer, as people, you know, sewers, we want to do that for somebody else. We want to give them a soft doll or an animal.
Right.
Something to love. Perfect. Yeah. Dude, put a little heart on it. Be so sweet.
Right.
Now, you have a background in sculpture. That was one of the things that you learned to do. And I love you have can you just tell us quickly the little story about your sculpture class? Because I love it.
Yeah. I went to the University of Hartford for fine arts, and I ended up taking a sculpture class, and the teacher said, you can do whatever you want. You can make whatever you want, but you have to take an item that you would normally see one way, and you have to translate it and use a different material than you would normally see that item used as. So I ended up choosing a light bulb, which is typically very small, very fragile, and I made it very large and very soft. And I used it as my pillow in college for a couple of years after that, because it was so comfy to just lay down and cuddle with while I was you know, doing my homework or reading books or whatever. So it was really fun.
I think that is just an incredible story. Did that sort of connect you to fabric then for a long time?
You know, it's funny. I don't think that it did yet. I think it took a little while for that to settle into me, to realize that was a talent, so to speak. When I designed the light bulb, I made a lot of mistakes, and I only know that now because I was able to go back. I found it in my mom's attic. I emptied all the stuffing out. I washed it, and I looked at how I made it, and, you know, the end of the light bulb where the little screws would be, it was a little too long, so I realized that I folded it down and made it shorter before stitching those last seams of the little end Mm-hmm. And so I realized I made some mistakes, but it was still really fun to realize that this has now become something for me. Something that started 20 years ago has become something completely different.
Yeah, that's the part that I like. It's like there are stepping stones that we all take and things that occur, and then later you go back. I think that's so cool. You went and took it apart. Oh, my gosh.
That is so neat.
Yeah, you had to see. I had to see. They see. That's how your brain works. Sometimes that's why. Yeah, people who are creative and end up making it their business, often you have that innate curiosity because you want to dissect and then tell people how they can do things. Your book.
I was actually talking to somebody who said the other day, they looked at me, what was I doing? I was holding this toy or something in a store or even maybe a piece of clothing, and I'm looking at all the scenes and just looking at it, and they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just working.
Right. Right. I know. It's something that you probably don't even realize you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about your book, because I think that there are so many quilters that also sew many, many other things, including wanted to make dolls and animals for children and family. And your book is called Sewing Tales to Stitch and Love. It's gorgeous. It is a gorgeous book, Carrie. Tell me a little bit about what it is, what's in it, why you decided to put it together this way.
Well, I wanted to create, I had all these ideas. I had all these stuffed animals. I had the turtle. I had the gnome doll. I had just a lot of things kind of already ready and done. And I knew I needed a place to put them all. And so I decided I wanted to write a book. And so I went to the publisher. I pitched the proposal. And with it, with each pattern, I wrote a little story. So I gave each little character, so to speak, a background story. And it was just really to kind of get the end user excited about what they were creating and that it could become real in the eyes of a child or a person, that you could give it a name, you could give it a story, you could use it for healing, you could use it for fun or imagination and playtime. But I just wanted to create a story for each one to just kind of set the stage, to just say, you know, this is what you can do too, because, you know, what child doesn't have a stuffed animal that believes comes to life when they go to sleep?
And you put those in the book, the final book, all the stories, right?
Yes. Each pattern has a name and a story to go with it.
You know, and that's something that if somebody's making it, like I'm right now looking at the Arctic Adventure, which is two little bears and an igloo. Oh my gosh, the igloo is so... It's so cute. It is so cute. And, you know, somebody's making that for a child. They can tell them the story.
Right. Right. And then they can sit down together and read the book, and they can read all the little stories together and then say, well, you know, what do you want to make? And then they start making something, and now you give it a name when it's all done. I just had two girlfriends over here the other day that were playing with my daughters, and they were I taught them how to sew, and they sewed up some little owls. And I saw one of the girls after school one day, and she goes, I finished my owl. I finished it. And I said, well, what's the theme? And she goes, I haven't decided yet.
Oh.
So that's always the next step for me is, well, what name did you give it? So I like to hear those things, those little details.
I think you are you're detail oriented. I mean, everything that we've talked about, you are detailed oriented. That's just beautiful. I'm not, but I love it. I appreciate it. You do some of your things are tiny, and I know that you break down how to do them very well. But what's some tips you can give me for working with smaller shapes with these projects?
I think no matter what size shape you're using, you need the right tools. When you go small, you definitely have to have certain tools in order to make them most successfully. My most favorite and most important tool is my Dritz turning tubes. Without my turning tubes, I can't turn little tiny things inside out. Some people use these little tweezers or, you know, forceps and different things. I love my turning tools. They are so easy, and they're not that expensive. I mean, maybe $4 or $5.
Yeah.
If you use a coupon, it's even better. but those are really, really, really important to have if you're going to work with really tiny things. You also need a lot of patience.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
There was one point in my book with my lobster. I really wanted to tell people, if you start sweating at this point, don't worry. I do, too. You know, like you just have to keep going and just work it. And then it happens.
Do you also have to shorten the stitch length to work with smaller pieces?
Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. It depends on the fabric, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, okay. with wool felt, I don't necessarily do that. But if mm-hmm. I'm working with a 1/8 inch seam allowance, which it sounds really tight, but it is, mm-hmm. And sometimes it's really important because you can only fit your fingers and a tiny piece of fabric under your sewing foot as it is. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. sometimes I even have to hand stitch certain pieces because you just can't get it under the foot. Or sometimes you just, you know, don't worry about pre-cutting or, you know, you cut it afterwards after you sew the stitch. But yeah, if I'm working with a 1/8 inch seam allowance, I'll definitely shorten my stitch just ever so slightly.
Now, I want to, we're almost out of time, believe it or not, but I want to tell people that they can go visit you at kidgiddy.com, mm-hmm. kidgiddy.com. And what's coming up? Do you have anything in the future? I know you have tons of ideas and you do a lot of things. So do you have something you can sort of share that's coming up?
Well, I just got the permission to announce that I am a licensed designer with Sizzix, Ellis & Dyes. So I'll definitely have some more news about that coming in May, which I'm really excited about. And until that comes out, I'll be doing some fun blog posts for them with some of their basic dyes.
And will they be dolls or other kind of projects?
I am not allowed to say.
Oh, even the ones with their basics?
The ones with their basics, I'm actually going to show a couple of different things, some different ways that you can incorporate some three-dimensional techniques, and then also I'm going to show how you can use two of their die cuts to make some little snow hats, warm little hats.
Yeah.
So those just be some really different things that you can use their basic dyes with.
Yeah, that is wonderful because people have those dyes and they're always looking for something
exactly.
new.
Exactly. You want to? I like having multiple options mm-hmm. and. You know, if you have one dye that you've spent money on, I want to know some other fun ways I can use them. Yeah. So I'm going to show some of that.
Carrie, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
This is the TokiNet Radio Network, radio with a cutting edge.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And what I love most about doing this show is that when I'm out traveling, when I'm out teaching, there are people who are in the classes or come to my talks and they'll say, you know, I know so-and-so and they have this really cool thing that they do and you need to check them out. And that happened recently. And it's just always, always amazing because, of course, I find great new people to talk to. So I found Jessica Alexander Rosalind Dracy's, who is at her site called lifeunderquilts.blogspot.com, and she quilts while she travels. That's one of her big things, and it's all about English paper piecing, and I love her book. I loved what she was showing, and asked Jessica to come on. So hi, Jessica. How are you?
Hi, Pat. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
You know, when did you learn to quilt? Tell me that.
Oh, gosh. I think I started to learn to sew from my grandmother's when I was a kid, and then I read a whole bunch of quilting books when I was in high school and tried to make quilts in college, but, you know, they weren't really quilted. But when I lived in Japan in 2002, I got my first quilting mentor, and she taught me everything, like everything she knew, and that's how I started.
Now, when you went to Japan, was your quilting mentor a Japanese quilter or an American quilter?
No, she's a Japanese woman, a housewife that I happened to meet on the train one day, and she invited me over, and I walked into her house, and it was beautiful, and there were quilts everywhere, and I said, oh my gosh, I'm staying. And she kind of took me in, and for the next half a year, I was at her house pretty much every weekend,
and
we'd just sit and sew together. It was wonderful.
The Japanese quilters do a lot of handwork. Did you find that when you were there? I mean, I know that a lot of what we see of their work here is handwork.
Yes, yes. When Mrs. Kubota taught me how to quilt, we started, you know, from the basics, tracing out templates onto, you know, lightweight cardboard, cutting them out, drawing them onto the back of the fabric with pencil, you know, on a sheet of sandpaper, cutting them out with scissors and doing it all by hand. And there was a deep appreciation for the process, you know, for spending time sewing. And something about it just really resonated with me and the types of quilts I wanted to be making. And so I was hooked.
You were hooked. You know, when you went to do your book, did you draw? Your book is called Quilting on the Go, English Paper Piece Projects You Could Take Anywhere, which is, it's just fabulous.
Thank you.
I really, really like it. You have a really nice take on everything. We're going to talk about it. But tell me, did that experience, your learning experiences with the handwork, did you pull from that when you started developing your book idea?
Well, I think handwork always appealed to me, but learning how to appreciate every step of the process just made it much more meditative. You know, you don't have to hurry up and cut everything and then hurry up and sew it together so you can have your quilt done in the weekend. and when I moved back to the United States, I had a real hard time fitting in with the quilting circles where everyone's like, go as fast as you can. Oh, we can do that by machine. And I said, no, really, stop. Enjoy the process. I was teaching a pouch class from the, like the pouch that's in the book, the Pouch Project, at a local shop. And she said, okay, how many classes do you want? I said, well, let's do it over a period of like 4 weeks. And she's like, it's a tiny little project. Why do you need 4 weeks to make it? But I'd give homework. You know, you have to hand stitch all of this before next week. And you know, get people to enjoy slowing down a little. So yes, definitely, that helped a lot.
So what? Tell me the a tip for English paper piecing that you give to people who haven't tried it before.
Just start. I guess that's the thing. People are really intimidated when they look at a quilt that has 1,800 diamonds in it. Like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to sew that. But I like to break down my patterns into like a puzzle piece unit. And if you just start making one star, or one star with some background diamonds added onto it. And then if you just focus on finishing one star or like one hexagon flower or hexagon diamond, then your pile of units amasses pretty quickly. And when you start putting those together, like, oh, wow, I've got a quarter of the quilt already done. So if you look at the whole thing and you try to cut out all of your patches in the beginning, you're going to get daunted. It's not going to work. So just start small, just give it a try, and then by the second star, you're totally hooked. I know I've got you.
Now, what do you tell people who are a bit more experienced? You know, there are a lot of people who have tried this, and, you know, maybe they're on that bigger project that's, you know, never ending. You know, what kind of tips do you have for that group?
Well, it's nice to find a support group. But I guess count up how much you still need to go and don't stop. Or one of the reasons I like English paper piecing, and I came back to it again and again even before I wrote the book, because you can pick it up and put it down. It's not like if I cut out some other quilt pattern and then I put it in a shoebox and I pull it out and I'm like, okay, what was this again? How big did I have to cut that? You really don't have to think about it. You can make a few patches and then come back next month and try again, and then make a few more, and then after time, it'll go on. So if you have a stalled English paper piecing project in the back of your sewing room, please pull it out. I actually have a weekly linky party on my blog to encourage people to keep going with their EPP project. And you can just take a picture of your progress and post it or post the link. And people will come by and visit, and like, oh, wow, you basted 3 hexagons this week. Congratulations. Keep going.
Yeah.
The little encouragement definitely helps.
Isn't that the best, though? You show your picture and people just get it. They get that's exciting, you know?
Yeah. Like, I didn't do anything but put together one flower today, but look, I did it.
Now, do you take the paper out? I mean, what, you know, it has to come out eventually, but, you know, either the paper or the plastic, there's different, you know, methods for the English paper piecing. But what do you do? What is your mode?
Well, for anybody who doesn't know, English paper piecing is a hand stitching technique where you first baste your fabric patch onto a paper or plastic template cut into the shape. And you can buy them pre-cut or you can cut your own. And you use the template to hold it in place as you whip stitch or do other stitches to attach them by hand. It really makes it easy to do intricate patterns with very little trouble because the template's holding your fabric for you. You know, you don't have to pin your edges together or line up your seams or anything like that. So you can do Y seams and bias edges, like, no problem. Really, the quilt basically makes itself so long as you get your template in there. The methods that I use, after you sew all of the seams of your template, you leave your basting stitches in and you just reach in and pull your template right out, and then you can reuse it.
Okay.
And so,
I've done a little bit of this. I've not done a lot, but I know that there are certain points where it seems like if I take the paper out too soon, then it gets floppy or not able to work with it, like maybe around the edges or something.
Yeah, that's true. If you are planning to add on to your shape, then you have to leave the template in until all, like the six sides of a hexagon, until all six sides are sewn down. And then when I am ready, like when I have the edge of the quilt or the edge of the pillow, whatever project it is, I will leave the templates in until I'm ready to quilt it. So then I'll take them out, press it really quick, and then layer and baste it right away. So you know, it can keep that sharp edge.
Do you then, personally, is your joyfulness come about by hand quilting your pieces since you have so much handwork in the top?
No. I do. I love the look of hand quilting. And if I have time to do it, I'm a big fan of pearl cotton, nice big stitches. But I've got two little kids, and I want my projects to get done. So I'm a free motion quilt newbie. I'm learning how to do it slowly, practicing a lot. But I also want my quilts to stay together, and I think that sending it out to the long armor or machine quilting it will reinforce all the handwork that's in there.
Yeah, I'm not a purist. I don't have to have it all hand or all machine. I'm like, I mix stuff up all the time. So it's just, you know, you time constraints, and we getting it done. You know, you want something to see. You want to be able to use it in your lifetime. Now, do you have a favorite project in the book? I know that's a hard question. I always ask it anyway.
I am a big fan of the little zippered pouch. And it's on page 80 if you've got the book in front of you. I like it, and I've made a whole bunch of them. You can use any quilt pattern for the top. You know, here I did it in half hexagons. But it's a really small project, and you can work, like, shrink down smaller patches if you want to. Use up scraps, it's good. And you don't really have to commit to making a whole quilt out of a pattern or a color palette. And I also like that once it's done, you can toss it in your bag or in your suitcase while you're traveling, and you have a little bit of quilted home to take, you know, away from
it. Yeah, that is nice. That is nice. Something personal. You know, you travel and teach some, right?
Yes. I travel a lot, and I'd like to start traveling to teach. I mean, now that my kids are getting older. But no, as a family, we travel a lot. My husband's family is in Athens, and so we go there for several weeks a year. And my family's in Chicago, so we bounce back and forth there too.
So if they want to contact you, just at your website, lifeunderquilts.blogspot.com, right?
Yes, please. If any guilds or shops would like to have me out, I'd definitely like to set something up. Please go to the blog and click on the contact me part.
And just to wrap up, tell me about quilting in public, because you have a love of doing that.
Well, I don't like just to sit waiting somewhere. You know, you watch people sitting around waiting for their kids at whatever lessons they're at, or you're riding the bus, the plane or something, and people are just playing on their phone. You know, that hobby is not going to keep you warm. If you find time and you stitch in public, you can start conversations, make new friends. Mm-hmm. That's how I found my first quilting mentor, actually. You know, you're not doing anything else. It's time to get work done. So
I think it's great. I just had never kind of heard it said that way. Quilting in public, it's like, yeah, we
Well, sometimes we get together with a group and we'll meet in a cafe and we'll all sit together. Or in Central Park, they'll have like picnics and you bring your lunch and everyone just sits out and sews. It's nice to sew outside.
It is nice. It is nice. And it's easier than taking your sewing machine to Central Park. So
that's for sure.
No, so we have very short. Have you ever had a funny conversation? Does anybody kind of when you're sewing?
Oh, I was sewing on the train a few months ago, and a little girl came up and she kept looking at me, and she clearly was interested and she wanted to sit down with me. And so when I invited her, but her parents were looking at me like, don't talk to strangers.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, no, it's okay. Really, I'm a quilt teacher. It's all right. And so she ended up sitting with me, and I taught her how to stitch, whip stitch some hexagons together. And she was very proud of herself.
Oh,
so I don't know. Maybe that'll spark something for her.
Jessica, this has been wonderful.
Thanks so much for having me, Pat. This is great.
So everybody needs to go look for Jessica's book, and we will be right back after the break. This is Pat Sloan.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together. Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And I know the hot topic that everybody loves and wants to know about is machine quilting your own quilts. And this is something that, you know, we can't even talk about enough. There's always something new to learn. So I have got a new book, a new author out, Jara Brandvig. And Jara's site is just so much fun. Quilting in the Rain. I just love that name. Jara, thank you for being here.
Hello. I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
You know, I have been watching your, you know, reading your writing, watching your quilts, just drooling on them like crazy. And then when your book came out, I was so excited. I was like, oh, good. You're going to tell everybody how to do this. So you're a big advocate of sewing your own quilts, but when did you discover quilt making?
Well, so I guess I've been quilting since 2007, so I guess it's been 7 years. I walked into a local fabric shop, and I saw all these beautiful fabrics and just pretty much became a fabraholic instantly. Mm-hmm. But I remember, you know, looking at a quilt top that was quilted on display. It was just the top, and I remember looking underneath it and thinking, yikes, you know, it just seemed like a really intimidating thing. So I did what any budding fabraholic would do, and I just started buying fabric. You know, I fell in love with all the little cute charm packs and fat quarters, and I just started buying fabric, and my husband thought I was crazy. I didn't even own a sewing machine. You know, I didn't grow up around quilt. I'm the first quilter in my family, so I just was basically hoarding fabric. And then that Christmas, my husband bought me a sewing machine, and it pretty much sat there for about a month.
Yeah.
I didn't want to open it up. But then, yeah, eventually, you know, I got the nerve to take it out, and I just started playing with it and got the quilting bug.
Oh, that's so funny. It's like you're collecting fabric first before you have the machine. You know,
yeah, I'm a big fabric fan.
Well, you know, let's talk about fabric first, and we'll talk about the book. But just tell me a little bit about how you approach fabric, because one of the things that was that drew me to your work was the way you put fabric together. I love your palette. I love your style and how you approach it. Can you just tell me a little bit about how you collect fabric?
Yeah, well, you know, honestly, fabric is what inspires me to create. So, you know, when I see the fabric, I know what I'm going to make once I see it. Like, I don't buy a pattern and think, what fabrics am I going to use? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just like with any hobby, whether you do woodwork or needlework or, you know, quilting, you know, it puts you in your zen zone or whatever you want to call it. And fabric helps me get into that mood. I guess I kind of like to think of it like painting, and I don't paint at all, but I like to think of it like the batting is my canvas and the fabric is the medium that I'm using. And mm-hmm. I just love it because one day I can be using modern bold prints, and the next day I can be using, you know, these whimsical, low volume, dainty prints. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could be doing the same pattern, but the quilt will have a completely different look to it. And I just love that because it keeps it so creative, and fabric allows you to do that.
That is so true. You just change out a couple pieces of fabric and it looks totally different, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I love it all. You know, I don't only love modern fabrics. I don't only love, you know, the cottagey whimsical stuff that's out there. I love it all. And, you know, if you look through the quilts that I made in my book, you'll kind of see that I use just a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is just, you have a beautiful style of how you put things together. Yeah. So let's talk about, I know I want to copy them. So, you know, that's just, you know, let's be real. You know, it's like, what did Jara do? I want to do that too. let's talk about Quilt As You Go, because, you know, honestly, I did never learn Quilt As You Go, but my mother-in-law did. My mother-in-law, when she took her beginning quilting class, they taught them to hand quilt that way with squares in a frame. And that was the whole process that at, you know, back in the day of how her teacher taught her. But so Quilt In The Go, I kind of thought of it that way for a long time. But you and other people have been doing other ways to quilt just sections, so you don't have so much under your machine at once, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you know, honestly, I don't even know the traditional way how to quilt as you go. But I just kind of started. So
I just kind of started with, like, you know, smaller scale things. Like, I saw, you know, Quilt As You Go coaster, Quilt As You Go placemat, and I thought, well, how can I expand this? How can I go bigger? Mm-hmm. But yeah, when I decided that I wanted to learn this technique and maybe write a book on it, I actually tried to stay away from, you know, looking at tutorials on how to do it, just because I didn't want it to sway my creative thinking on how I was going to go about doing
right.
it.
Right.
But what made me want to go bigger is, and made me, like, you know, really dive into this is, I wanted to make a traditional, like, stripped quilt. Mm-hmm. And doing that, you know, one way to do it is to do foundation paper piecing.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever something kind of gets, you know, challenging to me when quilting, I always try to think, well, what's a simplified way to do this? What's an alternative way to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what, you know, that's what a lot of modern quilting is nowadays. And so I thought, well, what if I, instead of piecing it directly onto paper, you know, what if I just piece it directly onto a smaller batting block? And while I'm at it, I could quilt it. You know, it just seemed to make sense. And so I played around with that idea, figured out what batting worked. And then from there, it just kind of became this big thing that I that I've just had a lot of fun doing and ended up writing a book about.
Now, when walk me through, there's like two kind of ways. One would be you have your batting and you sort of flip it. You're sewing your seam. And like you said, it's like almost like paper piecing, but you've got the batting in there. But then mm-hmm. you also have things that are quilted so you see the stitches. In that method, you don't see the stitch on the top, but you do both, right?
Yeah. So I have, I guess you can think of it of just, you know, taking just like a 12 by 12 inch batting square and then piecing your quilt block directly onto that batting.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, you know, piecing the block and then quilting it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're piecing it directly onto the batting. And then if you want, I have this whole chapter in my book on different ways to quilt it. So you could not quilt it and just kind of have a look that's similar to Stitch in the Ditch, or you can quilt parallel to the seams. You can quilt the whole block and then do free motion. There's just so many different ways to do it. It's a really creative process. But basically what you do is, so you have all these batting squares. You quilt directly onto those smaller batting squares, and then I have a chapter on how you square up those batting squares.
Mm-hmm.
And so then by the time you finish all of your quilt blocks, they're already quilted. So you have this nice stack of quilted blocks.
So when we're doing this, there's no backing. You just have batting over your feed dogs. Do you ever find that you get a lot of lint and stuff from that?
You know, I've played around with all different kinds of batting, and I found some good kind of, you know, batting that I recommend for Quilt As You Go, which is it's got to be needle punch. It has to be at least 80% cotton. And I've done so many Quilt As You Go quilts, and I don't, you know, have any, like, more batting buildup than, you know, doing a traditional quilt. But, the big key is just you got to be using the right kind of batting.
Yeah, that's good to know, because, you know, people might just pull anything, and I could just imagine some of it shredding down into the feed dogs a bit.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's got to be needle punched.
Yeah, that gives it that firmness. So when you feel it,
floppy. Yeah, exactly. It has a consistency of kind of like fleece.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, you don't get all that, the batting getting caught up in the feed dog.
Yeah. Now, when does the backing come in on this? Sometimes I have a hard time visualizing that because I have all the squares. I can visualize putting them together and you have great directions. But just give me a verbal on how the back happens.
Yeah. So like I said, you know, by the time you're all done making your blocks, you'll have this nice stack of quilted blocks. Very satisfying. And so the next step is to assemble those blocks together. And my book has two different ways to assemble the blocks. There's a block-to-block method and then also a joining strip method. And so once you've assembled your entire quilt top, you know, essentially it's already quilted.
Mm-hmm.
So the last step is to add the backing. And the nice thing about this, so it's basically one big backing piece goes behind your assembled quilted quilt top.
Okay.
And the nice thing about it is that you don't have to do too much basting because all of the intricate quilting is already finished. So there's very minimal basting and also very minimal quilting to attach the backing fabric. You know, and there's different ways to do it, and I go over that in the book as well. And then you just bind it, and then your quilt's all done.
So on the back, just like on the front, if you choose not to put a lot of extra stitches, you would just have some minimal to keep your back from like being just floating there, like some stitch of the ditch between the blocks or something.
Yeah, so I recommend stitch in the ditch. You can also do tacking, and it kind of just depends on how big you and, you know, your blocks are. Mm-hmm. But if you want to add borders, because I have a little section on how to add borders to your quilt as you go quilt, you can also, do the quilting on the borders at the end to attach the backing fabric. And that might sound kind of confusing right now, but the book goes on over all different kinds of ways to all kinds of creative ways to attach the backing fabric, but it's really simple.
Yeah, it's nice to have options. I like that you give options because, you know, one way might work better for one project, another way works better or gives you a different look that you want. So
that's
always good. Now, tell me, then we'll switch gears just a little bit because you love internet communities and you love to share, like many of us as quilters do. Where's your favorite place to hang out right now?
You know, probably for a while it was Facebook, but I'm having so much fun on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I proudly call everyone on Facebook and Instagram my quilting family, and they know it. because, you know, like I mentioned before, I didn't grow up around quilters. You know, I'm the first quilter in my family. My close friends that I've grown up, they don't quilt. And so it's like my quilting family, you know, through Facebook and Instagram, they're my means of sharing my passion. Mm-hmm. And I honestly probably would not be quilting as much as I am if it wasn't for them, you know, because I'll post a picture, people will get excited, or I'll get excited over something that someone else is doing, and, you know, that just kind of gets you to finish it.
It does. It's wonderful. It's like I was saying to Jessica earlier in the show, it's like they get you. They understand that you just did this little bit, and it's exciting because, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so easy to just start so many different projects at once and never finish them, you know, but if you have people watching you and wanting to see it done, or if you're using, you know, and I love Instagram too because you can follow, you know, your favorite fabric designers, and they can see the work that you're doing. You know, it's just fun to finish it, and everyone gets to, you know, love it and just see it and get inspired.
This is so true. This is so true. And you have a few fun things on your website at Quilting in the Rain. So people can come and check out, you know, some little few tutorials, and then get your links and come follow you on Instagram. So one more quick thing. Are you sending books from your site as well? Are you like signing them?
Yeah. So I'm selling some signed copies of my book. There's a link on my website. But you know, you can also get the book on Amazon. But right now they're temporarily out of stock. So come on over to my website.
Thank you, Jara.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was so much fun.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. And when I first learned about wool was from a quilt shop working with wool, because I may have done suiting, but wool for quilts I hadn't really seen until I was quilting and saw in quilt shops. And basically, Moda had wool on the bolts. There's hand-dyed wools as well from individuals. But, you know, on the bolt, it was like, oh, okay, this is a kind of a different thing. And I fell in love with working with it, collecting it. And when I got a chance to look at the book Hand Stitched Home by Susan Beale, the subtitle is Projects to Sew with Pendleton and Other Wools. It's like, oh my gosh, look at this. Somebody has done fantastic things. Susan is an author. She writes at West Coast Crafty. She does all kinds of amazing projects. But today I asked Susan if she'd talk to us about wool and her book. Thanks for being here, Susan.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Pat.
Now, what made you decide to write a book about using blankets and things that are already out there?
You know, I originally made a wool quilt as a single project for my book, Modern Log Cabin Quilting. So in 2009, I thought I really want to make a wool quilt that's warm and cozy as just a different way to use log cabin than the beautiful quilting cottons most of us are used to. Mm-hmm. So I went to the Woolen Mill store here in Portland, Oregon, which is Pendleton's huge flagship fabric store, and I just fell in love. I picked three different fabrics. I chose a plaid. I chose a large-scale jacquard, which is like the Indian trade blanket that a lot of us think of when we maybe think of Pendleton, and a huge scale. And then I chose kind of a neutral stripe. And mixing them together and piecing, they just all looked beautiful. They just sang together. So I was pretty much hooked from that first project. And I was so fortunate this year to be able to have my new book, Hand Stitched Home, which is a collaboration with Pendleton, using their beautiful fabrics for quilts and blankets, and then also smaller projects and even some beautiful things to wear.
Now, this just the whole concept of this is fascinating, because I love the look of the, you know, the design elements that are on those blankets. But you're, you know, I think blanket and I think, oh my gosh, I couldn't cut that up. How do you deal with that? I mean, what do you tell people about cutting up something like that?
Well, what's nice about sourcing wool fabrics is, as you mentioned, you know, Moda has some amazing choices. And then with Pendleton, which I'm so fortunate that they're local, just a few miles from my house, I can go find anything from scraps that are, you know, the size of, you know, maybe 6 by 10 inches or a long strip, the width of the entire loom that's been cut from the beginning or the end of a blanket. And then they also sell yardage in all kinds of different weights. So very lightweight, crisp, worsted to heavy, beautiful, thick blanket material that hasn't been bound yet. But if you have a special piece, you know, that maybe a family piece that maybe is a different size than what you wear, or like a jacket or a special coat, but it's just not getting any use as is, you could, you know, cut that up and make something else really beautiful with it and give it new life in a different way. Or if something's been damaged in one spot with a stain or like a pet chewing on it or moth, you can use the rest of the blanket for something stunning.
And they do have those issues. I mean, things just get, you know, things happen to, or the clothing, you know, it's out of style, but the pattern is glorious. Tell me a little bit about how to approach wool like this. You know, that do you wash it before you start to cut it? Like if it were a remnant piece or even off the bolt, because it feels different if it's right off the bolt versus after it's been, you know, handled or washed.
Absolutely. And some of Pendleton's wools are made to be machine washed and they're marked that way. And just to mention one quick resource, which is a great one, is on their website, which is pendleton-usa.com. They have a free pamphlet, a PDF download, that has all kinds of tips for caring for different wools.
Oh, good.
And it's really useful. It's a lot like the pamphlets they used to mail out kind of during the golden age of home sewing in the 50s and 60s that just really educated, you know, those of us sewing at home about using these really fine fabrics. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to kind of have that to look to. But one thing I love to do with wools that I'm using for a special project for, you know, a cozy scarf or to piece into a patchwork quilt is you can lightly felt them in the washing machine. And it really is so individual. You can put them through once and they'll just gain a really soft kind of felted but not heavy texture. And then if you put them through several times, they'll really become more dense and more kind of structural. So there's kind of some flexibility if you want to experiment a bit. But otherwise for, you know, just for fabrics that I buy at Pendleton, whether they're scraps or folds of fabric or right off the roll, I often don't wash them before I use them the first time if they're just really crisp and ready to use. But it really is a nice, like quilting cotton, it does change the texture exactly as you mentioned.
Okay. So that's really interesting. I like that you don't have to wash it. I always sort of had in my mind, it's like, oh, I better do that because, you know, if I want to wash it later, it's going to change. But you found that that doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's very individual. And the nice thing, too, is that the crispness is really pleasant. But then if you do hand wash or spot clean, you know, wool also really naturally repels dirt and kind of small, you know, stains or marks. I mean, obviously, certain stuff like, you know, something could certainly mark it. But it's really nice that if you wear a wool coat, you may notice that you can just kind of brush, you know, dust or dirt off, and it doesn't really tend to set into the weave of the fabric. It's really kind of, it kind of naturally repels it.
So when you're sewing this, do you need a walking foot? Is it going to really depend on your machine for that? Because you're going to have a bigger thickness under that foot plate.
Yes, I use a new needle, and it's a pretty, once you're stitching it, it's really so very smoothly. I would definitely use a larger stitch length, like a longer stitch length, and a walking foot. I have a Fast Classic quilt that has a little built-in walking foot that kind of equalizes the feed dogs, and I find that wonderful for all kinds of patchwork, but it's really nice for wool. But then what I love to do with wool, just one tip I would mention is, when you're stitching pieces together, especially for like a log cabin or an improvisational piece, like straight lines and geometric shapes, I like to stitch them together with a larger seam allowance, like a 3/8, maybe even a 1/2 inch if it's a thick wool. And then I use plenty of steam. I always use even distilled water in a spray bottle to really saturate the fabric and then press it with a iron on the wool setting. And I press the seams to one side, and then I do top stitching over the seam. So it just adds a really nice kind of cohesive smoothness to a patchwork wool piece, because wool can be very thick, as you mentioned, and it can be a little bit more challenging to maneuver. But if you kind of, if you treat it the way it likes, it's very cooperative.
Oh, that's an excellent tip. I hadn't really thought about top stitching like that. But I did notice that on one of the projects that had a close-up for your book. So I was like, oh, that was cool. Very, very good. Now, do you use batting at all? I mean, they start to get pretty thick.
You know, I have a few times, but most of the time I don't, because the fabric has so much wonderful body. And when I do a very simple, you know, like a, for example, a one-piece backing, like Pendleton's wool flannels, which are a very nice kind of a men's shirt weight, kind of really crisp but very flexible with nice drape. Those are wonderful to back quilts with. Or if I do a very kind of lightweight quilt top, I might back it with like an old blanket. And historically, a lot of wool quilts didn't have batting because, you know, women who were making quilts for their families would save those cottons and battings for the thinner cotton quilts for warmth. So it's kind of nice that the wool will almost cling to itself if you do a 2 layers with a top and a back, just as we would with cotton quilts. But the batting isn't nearly as necessary. It would certainly be a wonderful, luxurious kind of cozy quilt if you create a 3-layer, though. That would be just a perfect winter snuggle quilt.
Yeah, that'd be like weighting you down at night, maybe.
Yes, that's my other tip. This, I had mentioned this at my guild, Portland Modern Quilt Guild, is that if you do like a heavier piece tops with denser fabrics, which is mm-hmm. a wonderful way to do it, but will create some real bulk, you know, in a great way. Mm-hmm. I'd use a very kind of lighter weight back, and a cotton flannel would be nice too. But if you do a heavier, thicker quilt top with lots of, you know, kind of body to it, and then a similarly heavy back, you'll feel like you're at the dentist getting an x-ray. It's just almost like immobilizing. So I like to alternate. If I do a lightweight top, I'll use a heavier back and vice versa. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. That, I love that. I could just visualize that. You have a Pendleton blanket on top of us. We could just bring our own.
I've taken a couple backs off tops when I've realized the combination is just kind of going to be... pretty daunting as a real life blanket, but it really is a nice, we have my improvisational wool quilt, the brown and orange and colorful mm-hmm. one for my book is over our duvet on my bed with in my and my husband's room. And it's a perfect second blanket for these chilly winter days and nights.
Tell me just briefly, describe, you have I love your style. I love, like, you have a person here that is just so simple and so gorgeous in this book. Tell me just a little bit about your style before we wrap up.
Oh, sure. One thing I love about Hamstitch Home that has been really fun is that I created about half the projects in the book, and all of them use Pendleton wools, whether it's the jacquard, like the really geometric, striking, beautiful patterns, or the really iconic plaids, or even just the really smooth, beautiful solids. But I ask 13 friends to contribute projects, and they did amazing work. And so what I love is that you just can't go wrong with the fabric, and seeing what other people made with it was just as fun as coming up with my own ideas. But I love simple. I love strong lines and just letting the fabric tell you what it wants. And it's just the colors and the wool are just one of my favorite things about it. Just you can do something bold, something delicate, and it just really responds.
You know, this has been so much fun, Susan. Tell everybody your website so they can find you.
Oh, sure. Thank you. It's westcoastcrafty.com. And there's lots more about my books there, and then some Pendleton projects I've been working on that have been fun to share as blog tutorials, too.
Yeah, and you've written other books, and you have all kinds of other things going on. I just really appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, thanks so much. It's been so nice chatting with you, and I love your show, so it's just such an honor to be part of it. Thank you.
Thank you. This has been American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Please visit us at allpeoplequilt.com. Sign up for the newsletter. You can visit me at patsloan.com, and I have a newsletter. And I hope that I will see you out on the road while I'm teaching and giving talks. Please come up and tell me that you listen to the show. Next year, and we have a whole lot more going on, a lot of great things. So I will see you then.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.